not backing down.
Good evening for WBAI News in New York. I'm Linda Perry with some of the news for Thursday, February 23rd, 2017. Federal protections allowing transgender students to use school bathrooms and locker rooms matching their gender identities is gone. The Trump administration came down on the side of states' rights, lifting Obama-era guidelines. Transgender advocates are promising a fight. Casey Foster is coordinator with the Urban Youth Collaborative.
So rolling back the guidelines passed by the Obama administration is the clearest signal that this Department of Education is not going to be committed to protecting the civil rights of transgender youth. All young people deserve to have safe spaces in their school, and it's the responsibility of the Department of Education and the Department of Justice to ensure that the local states are providing those safe spaces and not discriminating against youth, I think especially when it's our most vulnerable youth. So transgender youth in their schools must be protected, and this is a sign that this administration is not going to provide the protections that are necessary, nor are they going to stand up to states and local legislators that are not going to provide protections for young people. It goes against, which is not a surprise, it goes against statements made during the campaign that they would protect LGBTQ community. But we've seen the way they've come after and persecuted immigrant communities. We've seen the way they talk about law and order coming to persecute Black communities. And so it's not a surprise that they're rolling this back at this time. And it's absolutely necessary for us to continue to fight on a local level to make sure no states are discriminating against transgender youth in their schools or any youth.
So, but this change is not really going to affect students in New York State, is it?
No, so from what we can tell, this change is not going to affect students in New York State. I think the precedent that this sets is that the Department of Justice and the Department of Education are letting states know now that we're not going to be vigilant in protecting students' rights. And so that's a very dangerous precedent.
This evening, there's an emergency rally to make it clear that New York will fight to keep protections for trans and gender nonconforming people and students. It's outside the Stonewall Inn in Greenwich Village. It's beginning about now. In other news, New York State elected officials are organizing against Governor Andrew Cuomo's budget cuts to senior centers. State Senator Daniel Squadron is touring senior centers, and he has an online petition to urge Senate leadership to ensure senior centers are fully funded. This in light of proposals to redirect millions of dollars in funding away from the centers. And as Andrea Sears reports, advocates for older New Yorkers are joining the fight.
In his State of the State address, the governor announced he would make New York the first age-friendly state in the nation. But his budget calls for cutting $17 million of federal funds for senior centers in the city, shifting the money to child care instead. According to Bobby Sackman with the group Live On New York, that would force 65 senior centers to close.
6,000 seniors a day would lose their local center. 1.5 million meals at the center would be lost. And 24,000 hours of case assistance would be gone.
Despite almost 15,000 letters asking Cuomo to restore the funds, the 30-day window for budget revisions passed late last week with no change. I'm Andrea Sears reporting.
You can join Senator Squadron's petition requesting that funding be restored to senior centers in Cuomo's budget by going to New York State Senator Daniel Squadron's website. In other news, the vote for the next chair of the Democratic National Committee is drawing near. Last night, CNN hosted a debate among the eight running for the chair. The front runners are Tom Perez and Keith Ellison. Perez is former labor secretary under President Obama, endorsed by former Vice President Joe Biden and former Attorney General Eric Holder. Representative Keith Ellison of Minnesota is the pick of Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders and Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren, and also also Representative John Lewis, among others. At the debate last night, Ellison says who and what the Democratic Party should represent.
President Trump paid you the highest compliment. In fact, this morning, he said, one thing I'll say about Representative Keith Ellison in the fight to lead the DNC, he's the one who predicted early that I would win. Do you welcome the president's praise?
You know, I don't really welcome any praise from President Trump. It really pains me to say those two words. The fact that I can... But I can tell you this. I can tell by July 2015 that he had a lot of momentum and that he was gathering large crowds, and that when he got up there and talked about trade and TPP, NAFTA, when he got up there and talked about jobs, when he got up there and talked about infrastructure, even though he was bad on all those issues, he was gathering crowds and he was telling people what they wanted to hear. I believe that those are our issues. Fair trade is our issue. That's why the AFL-CIO endorsed me. That's why the steelworkers endorsed me. Leo Gerard, one of the people I really admire, said that in Baltimore, right after the disturbance with Freddie Gray, he said, let me tell you, that we used to have 30,000 steelworkers in Baltimore. Now we got 3. We have been hit hard by policies over the last 4 decades. Wages have stagnated, and the Democratic Party has got to be the party that is fighting for working people every single day. And we have always got to be on the side of the worker. We can never be found standing on the other side when working people are trying to make a living.
While some would make the race between Ellison and Perez as if it were between the Sanders and Clinton wings of the party, according to a former DNC communications director, what's going to help the party is someone who can build the party's infrastructure. It's the plug in the wall that everyone's going to get their power from. And Ellison would take none of the criticism from the CNN moderator who questioned why Ellison wasn't at the Women's March on Washington, but was fundraising instead, and he reaffirmed his vision of what he says the party needs.
Let me say this. People who are grassroots activists know that we've got to demonstrate and we've got to march, but we also have to do some of the background work to make sure we rebuild the party. And so when I say that, I really believe that people who were at the Women's March know that, look, you know, somebody needs to be trying to rebuild the Democratic Party. Somebody needs to be talking about how we restructure this party so we can win elections, because they know that as important as demonstrations are, and they are, and I was in, actually at that later on that day, I was at a march in Miami-Dade standing with people protecting sanctuary cities. And so we all go to marches all the time. This idea that, you know, one person went to one march one day and that's some big deal, it's not. The truth is some people got to rebuild the party. Some people need to march. All of us need to create a new America where everybody's included.
Mr. Harrison.
The vote for the chair of the DNC is this Saturday. Former chair Debbie Wasserman Schultz was forced to resign during the Democratic convention. This after collusion between the DNC and the Hillary Clinton campaign was revealed in emails leaked by WikiLeaks. These leaks caused big uproars and walkouts during the convention among Sanders supporters, who knew all along that the fix was in against him. Meanwhile, the White House Chief of Staff Reince Priebus and Senior Advisor Steve Bannon spoke today at CPAC. It's the Conservative Political Action Committee. Bannon says it was CPAC that gave Donald Trump this springboard for his agenda.
It's the first time at Breitbart we started seeing him and saw how people, his speeches resonated with people. And then he would go out to these smaller town halls later, and really he got traction with the same message he's bringing today. Here's why it's going to get worse. Because he's going to continue to press his agenda. And as economic conditions get better, as more jobs get better, they're going to continue to fight. If you think they're going to give you your country back without a fight, you are sadly mistaken. Every day it is going to be a fight. And that is what I'm proudest about Donald Trump. All the opportunities he had to waver off this, all the people have come to him and said, oh, you got to moderate. Every day in the Oval Office, he tells Reince and I committed this to the American people. I promised this when I ran, and I'm going to deliver on this.
Reince Priebus.
How novel.
Yeah.
How interesting. I remember I was being asked by some reporters, they're like, why is Trump doing X, Y, or Z? And I said, because he said he would do it on the campaign trail. It's really not that complicated, is it? But no, there are. Okay, I like that one. There are some parts of this though that are fitful. The American Conservative Union, which puts on CPAC, was created after Barry Goldwater lost in 1964 in an effort to take all different kinds of voices from the right in the conservative movement and bring them together. So there is this question. There are those folks that consider themselves, you know, classical liberals or conservatives or Reagan conservatives. There are other folks that consider themselves libertarians. There are other folks that are part of this new Trump movement. And Trump brought a lot of new people. There's probably people in this crowd that wouldn't have been in this crowd before. So there's a lot of diversity here. We all know it when we're at the bar at the end of the day. Can this Trump movement be combined with what's been happening at CPAC and other conservative movements for 50 years? Can this be brought together? And this is going to save the country.
It's not going to save the country, according to Refuse Fascism. Sincera Taylor with the group appeared this week on Fox News media darling Tucker Carlson's program. She called him Trump's water carrier. Have a listen.
So I'm assuming that, I mean, you're not serious. I mean, this is like play acting for you. If you really thought he was Hitler, if you really believed that he was acting according to, as you said, the playbook of Hitler, then you wouldn't stop with going on a cable show. I mean, you'd go all the way, wouldn't you? I mean, you don't really think that, or you'd be committing acts of violence, right?
I absolutely think. Actually, he's not like Hitler. He has a Twitter feed, he has that ugly orange thing on top of his head, and he has nuclear weapons, the biggest nuclear arsenal in the world. And people better wake up, because he is more dangerous than Hitler ever
could
have been.
But I mean, let's just
absolutely
be real for a second.
No,
I know we're on TV,
do
but
not,
please be
hold
real.
On,
if you
hold
really
on,
thought
hold on,
that...
Hold on, you implied something, and I want to answer it. You implied that I'm going to do something that's untoward, whatever. I'm calling for mass political protest and resistance, building on what's happened and staying in the streets in the name of humanity. Before the man starts, he asked three times, if I have nukes, why can't I use them?
No, I
this
can see
is
your,
mass
I,
incineration of human
okay,
beings on an
I get
industrial
it. I can
scale.
See that you're,
all
I can
crime
see you're spun
against
up here.
Humanity.
But let's just be more specific, because I want to take you seriously. I assume you're being serious, hard as it is to believe, when you use rhetoric like he's Hitler, he's going to incinerate the world.
No, I
How
said
are you
nuclear weapons are the mass incineration of human
well,
beings
sure, okay.
on an industrial
but,
scale.
But,
oh, sure.
You think
nukes
he could destroy
are no big
the
deal
world.
For you. I know you like to carry water for the liar-in-chief. I know you like to justify and rationalize the sexual predator-in-chief. But I don't think this is a joke. This is for humanity, and he is dangerous.
But what are you going to do about it, Sincera? That's my question. Other than, like, jump around in the street with a sign in your hand, okay, no, and write your little manifesto.
RefuseFascism.org has a manifesto, as you said. RefuseFascism.org.
Yeah.
We say we have four things people should do. They should manifest the no. They should protest every outrage and crime. But we have to have a single unifying objective. And the people who are waking up in this country who are horrified by this man with his finger on the nuclear weapon, we need to recognize that he has to be driven from office through mass political resistance before it is too late. Fascism advances through stages.
Okay,
shock, awe,
this
violence,
is silly. You
and
don't
then periods of normalization.
Fascism with it's, political resistance, but whatever, you may not know
actually,
that.
Actually, it would have taken millions and millions to rise up to stop Hitler. It
but
absolutely
you,
would have.
But what do you
and
think,
it's what people should have done.
Okay,
and it is shameful.
It
is shameful for you to dismiss.
But hold on, I know it's shameful, but let me just ask you this.
It's
no,
funny
this is
to
your
you.
Question. So the
no, because
million...
I know you love to carry water for this criminal, war criminal wannabe in chief.
Right.
He's itching.
But hold on.
You find
it's
that as petty matter?
There were 62...
Tucker, you find that petty. You find
Look,
that
I'm
a petty concern
real,
that he wants to be.
I know that you're
it
very
is
excited,
real.
But I'm trying to ask
nuclear
you a real question.
Nuclear weapons are
Don't
as serious as you
off.
Can
I
be.
I just want to ask you... Okay, let me ask you one last question, okay? 62 million people voted for Trump, and disproportionately, they were people at the lower end of the income scale.
Oh,
they were,
God.
They were, actually. They were middle class and below, mostly. Opposed to Trump were, I don't know, the hedge fund managers and privileged people like you. Did you ever think
you
to yourself, like, why
about
is
him.
The
Can
middle
I tell you
class?
Something? He lost
well,
the popular vote.
To...
He lost the popular
okay,
vote, and no election fair or fraudulent. No election
but
fair or fraudulent
had...
can justify ripping up the
please,
rule of law,
please
undermining the
question.
Courts, threatening and shutting
of
down
You're
the press.
You're saying that you should throw a duly elected president out of office.
No, I'm
so
saying people
about
should
the
resist.
Rule of law.
Yes, that's what he means when he says so-called judge. That's what he means when he fires an attorney general who disagrees with his laws.
What I want to do is get to how you think.
What you want to do is normalize fascism. What you want to do is try to caricature and dismiss people who are telling the truth.
Sincera Taylor with Tucker Carlson. You can learn more about Refuse Fascism by going to their website, refusefascism.org. In other news, there was a letter signed by more than 350 groups delivered to New York State Attorney General Eric Schneiderman. It urges him to continue with his investigation of ExxonMobil. Schneiderman subpoenaed the oil giant. He asked for documents showing it committed fraud by hiding what it knows about climate change from investors. But the oil company is fighting back. It's accusing Schneiderman and other attorneys general of engaging in a conspiracy. Megan Ahorn with NYPIRG, the New York Public Interest Research Group, says with resistance to the investigation from Exxon and its allies in Congress growing, groups such as 350.org and Food and Water Watch are urging the Attorney General of New York State to keep going.
We wanted to make sure that Attorney General Schneiderman knew that the environmental community, that community groups, that individuals, voters and taxpayers have his back, supporting moving this investigation forward.
Earlier this month, ExxonMobil filed a brief in a Texas court accusing Schneiderman and Massachusetts Attorney General Maura Healey of infringing on the corporation's free speech rights. Texas Congress member Lamar Smith accused the attorneys general of trying to criminalize corporations that hold alternative views on climate science. According to NYPIRG staff attorney Robert Kornblum, last year Smith even demanded that they turn over documents from their investigations.
Both Attorney General Healey in Massachusetts and Attorney General Schneiderman refused to comply with those subpoenas because attorney generals are allowed to investigate fraud. In fact, that's their job.
Last week, the House Science Committee again subpoenaed documents from the attorneys general. Activists say evidence suggests ExxonMobil's own research linked fossil fuels to climate change 40 years ago. But Ahern notes the company has actively sought to suppress and deny that connection. In other news, as many suspected, newly released emails between the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency Administrator Scott Pruitt, when he served as Oklahoma's Attorney General, and the oil and gas industry lobbyists show a very cozy relationship. Rebecca Miles reports.
Among the major revelations from the release of more than 7,500 emails on Wednesday was Pruitt's close ties to fossil fuel interests, including the billionaire Koch brothers. Those relationships involve Pruitt in challenging environmental regulations, even putting his letterhead to a complaint filed by one firm, Devon Energy. Pruitt was asked about the letter during his Senate confirmation hearing to head the EPA by Oregon Democratic Senator Jeff Merkley.
Why do you need an outside oil company to draft a letter when you have 250 people working for you?
Senator, as I've indicated, that was an effort that was protecting the state's interest and making sure that we made the voices of all Oklahomans heard on a very important industry to our state.
You said all heard, but you only sent it on behalf of a single voice, the oil company. Thank you.
This practice of Pruitt rubber stamping the fossil fuel industry's goals was first revealed in 2014, but the emails show it occurred more than once. Among them, that the American Fuel and Petrochemical Manufacturers, an oil and gas lobby group, provided Pruitt with template language to oppose ozone limits and the Renewable Fuel Standard Program in 2013. Pruitt later challenged both regulations. The emails were withheld during Pruitt's EPA confirmation hearing by the State Attorney General's office. Pruitt was confirmed as head of the EPA on Friday. The emails released were in response to a Freedom of Information Act request by the Center for Media and Democracy, which had made 9 separate open record requests for Pruitt's emails. In his speech at the EPA headquarters on Wednesday, Pruitt praised career employees and promised to, quote, listen, learn, and lead, end quote. He said regulators such as the EPA ought to make things regular, and added he believed that we as a nation can be both pro-energy and jobs and pro-environment, and we don't have to choose between the two. Rebecca Miles, WBAI News, New York.
And you're listening to the news on WBAI in New York.
Time.
A public-private coalition has been formed to partially decriminalize prostitution in New York City. This is in the wake of similar recent moves overseas by France, Sweden, Norway, and Iceland. It's being led by the Bronx-based leader, Reverend Dr. Q English. She's founder of the Not On My Watch Safe Haven Coalition, and Dorchen Leithold, advocate and legal director at Sanctuaries for Families. Grace Price reports.
The effect of partially decriminalizing prostitution would be that providers would not be prosecuted, but police would still go after sex buyers and traffickers. In other words, cease prosecuting prostituted people and still go after Johns and pimps. I saw this firsthand at Rikers Island. The girls in on prostitution were the ones trafficked, pimped, and usually put in there by their abusers with law enforcement connections. I know one woman, Michelle, who the COs taunted endlessly because she was there on prostitution charges with only $500 bail. According to Rev Q, those pushing for full decriminalization are white middle-class, quote, sex workers who have autonomy. They don't speak for the 99% of women and girls like Michelle conscripted into a life of sexual slavery, who are black, brown, or non-white, who don't enjoy the comforts of a college dorm from which to post on sugardaddies.com from. At an event in Harlem for Rev Q's coalition in January of this year, New York City public advocate Tish James spoke about her 2+ decades combating sex traffickers. She says she once represented a woman who tried to set her husband's bed on fire. She tried to kill him because she was tired of being prostituted and being told to, quote, go bring me back some money from the streets at 9 months pregnant. Instead, she waited for him to fall asleep and set his bed on fire. This story is not out of the ordinary. It reveals the desperation and extremes experienced by some women who are being forced into sex slavery. According to Inspector James Klein with the NYPD's Crime Prevention Division, changes are underway in how the NYPD addresses sex trafficking. With New York Police Department Commissioner James O'Neill and First Lady Shirlane McRae, a restructuring of the Vice Unit was announced at One Police Plaza earlier this month. 25 new detectives and a 24-hour tip line for reporting allegations of human trafficking.
We do not punish people who are being hurt. We bring the abusers, the traffickers, to justice.
The NYPD's Vice Unit will dedicate 25 specialized detectives to investigate sex trafficking cases, going after those who traffic or patronize victims for sex and protect youth and undocumented immigrants. New Yorkers can now report incidents through a new hotline, which will also provide victims with legal help regardless of immigration status.
Officer Flores of the NYPD picked up the new anti-trafficking tip line, 646-610-7272. When asked how the hotline worked, where tips are on passed, what assurances were there that victims wouldn't be prosecuted, and what oversight there is to ensure confidentiality of the information reported, she said, we do a recap of all calls after we've sent the information either onto human trafficking or the prostitution units. I can't tell you more than this. Meanwhile, some advocates are pleased with the reform efforts. Dorchen Leithold is with Sanctuary for Families. The group is instrumental in leading the coalition of interfaith and feminists to push the NYPD to cease prosecuting prostituted women and girls and instead to address demand by pursuing pimps and Johns.
The New York State Anti-Trafficking Coalition advocates for a paradigm shift in the city's response to trafficking and prostitution. That means stopping the arrest of people for prostitution, many if not most of whom we know are victims of human trafficking, and redirecting law enforcement efforts against traffickers, pimps, and other exploiters, including those who create the demand for this multi-billion dollar a year industry. We are absolutely thrilled that NYPD, together with First Lady Shirlane McRae, are embracing and putting resources behind this urgently needed change.
Rev Q, Chief Klein, and Dorchen deserve kudos for their first steps. Grace Price, WBAI News, New York.
Grace Price is an advocate for the rights of women and girls in jails, detention centers, prisons, and she works to close the Rose M. Singer Center, the all-female jail on Rikers Island. Again, that trafficking hotline number is 646-610-7272. 646-610-7272. And that's the WBAI Evening News for Thursday, February 23rd, 2017. The news was produced with Rebecca Miles, Andrea Sears, Grace Price, and Reggie Johnson. Linda Perry, WBAI News, New York.
Message in a bottle.